We're holding on Mem Vav Amr Aleph, the second line. We were dealing with the issue of where a worker claims he hasn't been paid. The Balabais says you were paid, and we said that we said in the Mishnah that in that case the worker, this is one of those cases where we have a Shvur Dirabanan, the worker can swear under certain circumstances and collect his pay. We said that there was the consideration that the Balabais is not going to want to be over on Bal Tolin, but there's the Isser to not delay the worker's pay beyond a certain time frame. But then there's also that the boss, the employer, is busy as various other workers, or most of the time he does, and therefore we assume that he may have just forgotten and mixed him up with a different worker, as opposed to the worker who doesn't have that. So we were talking about that. We were talking about the related point, if there's an argument between them about the amount that he was supposed to be getting, where we said that the Braisa says that then Hamotzi Mechaveh L'Varaya. So we were talking about that, and then we were talking about the difference of whether he hired him in the presence of Edim or not, where if there's no Edim, then he has a migui to say, I never hired you in the first place. So the Gemara continues on this topic. They sent a message from the yeshiva of Rav to Shmuel. Rav passed away, Rav Shmuel Goyen tells us, 7 years before Shmuel. So after Rav had passed away, they had a new Rosh Hashiva. But nevertheless, Shmuel, being the senior Talmud Chacham of that time, very often they would ask their questions from Rav's yeshiva to Shmuel. So this was one such example. So they said, Yilamdenu Rabbeinu, Rebbe, teach us what would be the din. Uman Omeshayim Kotzatzali, where the craftsman says that we had arranged that you were going to pay me 2 zuz per hour or per job, whatever it is. And the employer says, the employer says I arranged only one. Mi nishba, who is going to swear? When we said before, in other words, so they're saying it seems to be a given that there's going to be a shavuah. Now, we said before in the Braisa, Hamotzi Mechaveh L'Varaya, but they're understanding that to mean, in other words, that there's going to have to be either there's going to have to be a shavuah from one side or the other. Is it going to be a shavuah like the kind Minatora, where the Balabais is going to swear and be potter, or is it going to be like the shavuah Derabanan that we've been saying throughout the Sugya, where the employee is going to swear and collect the actual amount? The machlokas was showing him what exactly the scenario over here is. The Balabais is saying, "Lechatzatzi l'chol achas, I arranged for you only one." But does he mean I arranged only one and I already paid it? Or does he mean I arranged one and I haven't paid it yet? So the Ramban understands the Rif to be saying the second possibility that we're talking about the Balabais is Mordu Mitzas. Yes, we arranged I was going to pay you one more, and I haven't yet paid it to you. So now he's a Mordu Mitzas. I mean, I told you, you have to swear. So therefore, now the question is, would we say that instead of a regular Shvuah Mordu Mitzas, would we say that now the craftsman has the ability to swear and be able to collect the second Zuz, or maybe not? So that's according to the Ramban. That's according to the Ramban, and Milchomos is his understanding of the Rif. The Rimigash actually learns differently. That we're talking about where the Balabai says Kofa Hakol. He's saying I arranged one and I already paid it. And even then we're saying that there is a shvuah over here, and the question is just who is the one who swears over here. So then Ramban, after he discusses what the Rif says, and he mentions also what the Rimigash says, and the Rimigash was the Rif's star Talmud. Interestingly, as a little historical note, the Rimigash came to learn by the Rif when he was all 12 years old. He learned by him continuously for the next 14 years, Yom and Valayla, and then when the Rif passed away and the Rimigash was 26, the Rif appointed the Rimigash as his successor, as the Rosh Hashiva, because he had been such a Talmud Muvak. So now his understanding of the Rif, the Ramban agrees with over his own understanding. In any case, so and the post-game Paskin following suit. So therefore, so the result is Ogamara is talking about whether the Balabais says I already paid you that one zuz, or whether he's saying I didn't pay you yet. Either way, the question is going to be who swears. Omulahan, so Shmuel answers.
Who is the reef and who is the Rimigash?
Okay, so the reef is Rabbi Yitzchok Alfasi. He was a tremendous towering Uri Rishon. So he wrote his Sefer, his Sefer called Sefer HaLochas. It's printed in the back of most Gemaras. What he did was basically he created a digest of the Gemara, taking out most of the Shach of Italia and getting down to the bottom line Halacha. And also incorporating things from the Goinim and all that. So his Sefer was a landmark in Halacha. Eventually now the Rambam in most places follows the Rif. So the result is that the Rif's understanding of Halacha is the one most generally accepted, because in turn the Shulchan Aruch used the Rambam as one of his three authorities on the final Halacha, the Rif, the Rambam, and the Rosh. So since most of the time
what
the Rambam.
What's his title?
So the actual title of the Sefer is Sefer HaHalochos, but nobody calls it that. People just call it the Rif. Rif standing for Reb Yitzchak Fassi, because he came from the city of Fez in North Africa. But it's a major landmark in Sefer Halacha. The Rimigash was, as I said, the Rif's star Talmud. He came to study by the Rif when he was 12 years old and remained his Talmud, remained his devoted Talmud for the next 14 years. And when the Rif passed away, the Rif was 90 about when he passed away, and the Rimigash, his Talmud, was only 26. But the Rif appointed the Rimigash as his successor as Rosh Hashiva.
And what was his full name?
So the Rif is Rabbi Yitzchok Alfasi. The Rabbi Migash is Rabbi Yosef Halevi Ibn Migash.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And this was after Rashi or before?
This is around the same time as Rashi. The Rif passed away 2 years before Rashi, so they were basically contemporaries. The Rif was somewhat older. The Migash was belongs to the next generation. The Rambam's main Rebbe was his father, Reb Maimon, and Reb Maimon was one of the Rimigash's Talmidim, which is how we have then that the Rif's and the Rimigash's opinions in Halacha were generally accepted by the Rambam. The Rambam, in fact, writes, he writes about the Rif when he summarizes what he accomplished. In one place, he says there's probably fewer than 10 places where one could disagree with the Rif. In another place, he says more like 30 places, but whatever, very few in the entire corpus of Halacha where he finds reason to disagree with the Rif. And as far as the Rimi Gash, also, he talks about what a towering Talmud Chacham he was.
And did the Rif have the Rashi commentaries before he did this?
Probably not. It seems even the Rambam didn't have Rashi available to him yet. Even though the Rambam lived two generations later, this is long before printing. After all, Rashi gives us a running commentary on the Gemara. Not always is Rashi's understanding actually followed in Halacha in practice, especially when Tosfos disagrees with him. All right. So anyway, let's get back to the Gemara over here. So the bottom line is, in other words, so we have over here, the Rif doesn't actually explicitly say what he holds the case to be like, but the Ramban in turn, so now in later generations, you had various G'dayli Yisrael who discussed the Rif's works and commented and critiqued on them. In particular, you have Reb Zrachya Halevi, also a Rishon, wrote a sefer called Hamor HaGodol and Hamor HaKotan to disagree with the Rif in many places. Then you have the Ravid and the Ramban went and wrote their own notes on the Rif, sometimes agreeing with the Raza, sometimes criticizing him. So now the Ramban's explanation on the Rif explains that apparently he's medayik from the wording of the Rif that he would hold that the din we're talking about over here, where again they asked Shmuel, what's going to happen where there's this argument over the pay, mi nishba, who is it that swears? And Shmuel answers that the Balabai swears, So again, the Ramban understands the Rif to be saying that we're talking about specifically when the Balabais is Mojib Mitzras. So he's saying that I agree that I made that I haven't paid you yet. I just say the amount that I made up to pay you was less than it was supposed to, was less than you claim. Whereas the Rimi Gash understands and the Ramban ends up agreeing with him that we're talking about whether the Balabais is Kofer Hakol or whether he's Mojib Mitzras. Okay, so let's go on. So Omar Lahan, so Shmuel answers, Bazu Yeshova Balabais, Vyafsid Uman. In this case, the Balabais swears, and the Uman is going to lose that second Zuz. Because, like we learned yesterday, Ktsitsa Vada Mitcha Dhiri Inchi, because the amount that that people set up is definitely something that people will remember. So we can expect, in other words, it's one thing where he's busy with a lot of workers, he may have forgotten which ones he paid and which ones not. But as far as how much is supposed to be paid, that we don't expect that that we and therefore we can say as far as whether he paid him or not, that we say that the socher can swear, but not when it comes to this case where it's a matter of how much he made up with him. We can expect that the Balabais remembers that and that the Balabais remembers that. Tosfos also, by the way, mentions that we're talking about that he's saying that he didn't pay it yet, which again basically agrees with the Rimi Gash. Did Tosfos know what the Rimi Gash said on the subject? I don't know. They do mention the Rif Sefer a lot, implying that they had that, but I don't know if they ever mentioned the Rimi Gash. So the Gemara says, "Eini, is that so? V'hotoni Rabba Bar Shmuel, didn't Rabba Bar Shmuel teach a braisa, which we learned yesterday, kotzatz, that where there was an argument how much the pay was, hamotz in the chaver of a raya?" Now, a raya implies you have to bring an actual raya, not we're not talking about shvur, the Eloi Maisi raya, and it sounds like, therefore, if he doesn't bring a raya, poka, then that's it. His claim is gone. He has there's nothing further that he can do. Now, am I? Now, why would the Braisa be saying, I'm Motzim Achavel Araya? According to what Shmuel is saying, Yishova Balabais Fiyafsid Uman. It sounds like the Balabais has to swear, and then the Uman loses out. Meaning, in other words, why would the Braisa say it in a phrase, I'm Motzim Achavel Araya? Meaning, all it is Beis Din is going to tell the Socher, bring proof, and if not, then that's that. Based on what Shmuel is saying, no, the Socher would counter argue, wait a minute, it's true, I need to bring a Araya, and if I can't, But if I can't, it doesn't mean my case is dismissed. It means now the Balabais has to swear, and then he'll be potter. How does that fit with the Braisa? So Omer Rav Nachman Sdodin Katoni. So Rav Nachman answers because the Braisa is actually kind of talking about two cases in one. Oy mevi raya. Either he'll bring an actual proof, such as Edim, that he was supposed to get two, V'yitol, and then he's getting two. Yishova Balabais, V'yafsid Uman, or the Balabais is going to swear, and the Uman is going to lose out. So the Braisa is not really getting into that level of detail. All it's saying, generally means exactly that. He has to bring a raya, and if not, then there's nothing else. Here it means, in other words, you want to have, if the Balabais should not be able to be potter with a shvur, then you need to bring a raya to the contrary. But in other words, there definitely needs to be a shvur, and the answer is the shvur is going to be on the Balabais in that case. So the Gemara continues. Maisi, though, I have another contradiction. A braisa says, "Hanosin talisa le'uman." A person gives his talis to a craftsman to fix or to wash or whatever it is. And then there's also an argument about how much he was supposed to pay him. Uman oima katsatsa li shtayim. The Uman says that you were supposed to pay me two. We had agreed that you're going to pay me two zuz. Valoima la katsatsa lachala achas. And the customer says, I agreed to pay you only one. So then it depends. It's not just a matter of that the Balabais takes a shore. Kol man shetalis biad Uman. As long as the Uman has the talus in his possession before he's returned it, then al Balabais, lahobiraya, then the Balabais has to bring that proof, and if he wants to be able to take back the talus, he's going to have to bring a proof, or he's going to be able to pay, or he's going to have to pay. Um, so uh, Now, basically, as a migri, they're basically as a migri, because you can say that this talus is mine, you sold it to me or whatever. Nosnaloi, but if the woman gave it to him, and then there's the argument, then it depends. This mano, if he's demanding his pay during the time, which as we learned yesterday, based on the Gemara and Bava Metzia, once the job is over, the balabais is given a grace period of the next oina to go and put together the cash to pay him. So then if it's during this money, if it's during that time, nishva v'noito, then he swears and collects his two. Over his money, but if the time is over, then we're going to say, motzi mechaver l'varaya, and then he's going to have to bring proof that he actually was supposed to get two. So now, we see that during the time before that deadline is over, the socher was saying in this case he had fixed or whatever the other guy's talus, and he's entitled to swear and collect. Now according to Shmuel Amai, Yishav HaBalabayis V'yafsid Uman, according to what Shmuel is saying, the Balabayis should swear and the Uman should lose. Why in this Braisa would it be different? So the answer is Amar Nachri Chachamani Rabbi Yehuda, because you could say that Braisa is only according to Rabbi Yehuda. The Omar, where Rabbi Yehuda says, and we're going to discuss in a minute, where Rabbi Yehuda says this, Kol Zman Shavua Noita Eitz HaBalabayis, wherever the Shavua inclines to Balabayis, meaning in other words, wherever Midaraisa there would be a Shavua on the Balabayis, then Socher Nishba V'Noitel. Then instead, the Chachamim took that Shavua and put it on the Socher instead, and he will be able to collect. Because like we said, in the case where the worker was saying that he wasn't paid yet, again, the Balabayis may not deliberately be lying. He may be forgetful because he has a lot of other workers, and therefore we said that the Socher swears and collects. Well, over here, since the Balabayis is more demixed us, because he's saying that he's admitting he owes him only one, so therefore already he's a more demixed us, so then the Chacham are going to say that we're going to take that Shavua of more demixed us, which should have been on him, and instead we're going to put it on the Socher. But meanwhile, that's only according to Rabbi Yehuda. The Chacham say that the Balabayis would swear and be potter. So then Shmuel is saying in that case, then the Chachamim did not make a takana any differently. They still said that the Balabayis will swear and be potter. So first we have to figure out where Rabbi Yehuda said that. Hey, Rabbi Yehuda, which statement of Rabbi Yehuda implies that he says that the rule is, when do we say that there's this hipuch shvur, that we flip the shvur and have the socher or the uman take it, is only when there is a shvur in the first place? Which statement of Rabbi Yehuda implies that? Ilemed Rabbi Yehuda de Masnissin. Do you mean the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah, where several times in our Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda had said that when do we say, for example, you've said about the Socher, and you've said about the Nigzal, and a number of other cases in the Mishnah, that Rabbi Yehuda had said there always has to be Moedim Mitzvahs in order for the Socher or whatever to swear. So in the case of the Socher, for example, the Mishnah had said, the Socher says, I haven't been paid. The Balabayis says, I paid you. So we said, there's a Shavua on the Socher takes a Shavua and then collects the money. But Rabbi Yehuda said that would only apply only if the Balabayis is admitting to part of the claim. So he says, for example, I paid you half your pay, and I said, I paid you half your pay, and I still owe you the other half, and the other one says you haven't paid me at all. So if you're going to say that Rabbi Yehuda from our Mishnah is what we're referring to over here, no, achmuri komachmer, on the contrary, he's being more machmer, that the socher cannot always take that shavua. It's not, because we said, Rabbi Yehuda oimer, agitation mitzas hajar, that Rabbi Yehuda had said, when can the Socher swear and be able to collect? Only when the Balabayis claims that he already paid him half of it. But if the Balabayis hadn't paid him, had then said, I didn't pay you anything at all, then we'd have the usual rule of Kofa Hakel, namely that the Balabayis would swear and be potter. So in other words, if Rabbi Yehuda is saying that Rabbi Yehuda would be saying that in that case the Balabayis swears in his potter, then that means, on the contrary, Rabbi Yehuda is limiting the scope of when the socher is going to swear. So why would it be then that in the case where they're only arguing about the amount, that Rabbi Yehuda is going to say, you know what, let the socher swear and collect, and you're going to tell me that that's the braisa, that the braisa that we just quoted, that we're going to say that if it's during that, that if it's during the time after that, if it's during that 12-hour period, we said that the socher should be able to swear and collect. Why? It's from based on our Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda is saying that in general, the Bala Bias usually has the upper hand, and he, and only in the case where there's motive mixas would we say that he swears. So therefore, so it can't be that Rabbi Yehuda's opinion of our Mishnah is the one that was saying that our Braisa follows that. This that Rashi is saying, so Rashi is saying, we're talking about that there would have been a shvua on the Bala Bias because Kofa Hakel, Tosfos and a lot of other Rishonim ask, wait a minute though, you're talking about Shavuos Heses, but when we learned about a Shavuos Heses a few days ago, that was only a Takana from the time of the Amoraim, from the time of Reb Nachman. Reb Yehuda, the Tana, lives long before that. So there's no Shavuos Heses yet for a Kofar Hakel. So what kind of Shavua are we talking about? So the Rimi Gash also says, similar to Rashi, that we're talking about the Shavua of a Kofar Hakel, but in the times of the Mishnah, there wasn't a Shavua of Kofar Hakel yet. So they talk about that it means that not that there's an actual shvua for kofar hakol, but we just mean, in other words, where the chachamim need to make a shvua and need to create a shvua, and they need to say that normally we would expect this person would swear, and instead we're going to have the other one would swear. Then Rabbi Yehuda is going to say, as I was going to go on to say, that we don't do that. So we don't mean, in other words, that in this case, without a tachanas chachamim, the Bala Bias would have had to swear because that's a shvuas heses, and shvuas heses didn't yet exist at the time we're talking about. We just mean, in other words, logically, if there was going to be a shvur, we would have put it on the Bala Bias, and in this case, then we're talking about putting it on the socher instead. Anyway, the point is there. So the point is, therefore, that Rabbi Yehuda's opinion in our Mishnah does not necessarily dovetail with what we're saying, which is that Rabbi Yehuda is saying in the Mishnah that only when he's moedim mitzvahs when the Bala Bias is moedim mitzvahs would the socher swear. That doesn't seem to fit well with the braisa that we just said, that said that if it's bismano, then the socher swears without distinguishing whether the Bala Bias had, we said there's an argument how much the pay was, but without distinguishing whether the Bala Bias says I already paid it to you or not. So if you're going to say that braisa, in order to not contradict Shmuel, that braisa goes according to Rabbi Yehuda, we don't mean Rabbi Yehuda's opinion of the Mishnah. Ella Rabbi Yehuda de Braisa. So the answer is, rather, we're talking about Rabbi Yehuda's statement in a Braisa. The Tanya, Socher calls Manshalei over all of Zmanoi, when a hired worker, as long as the time has not passed, the time during the grace period during which the Torah says that the Bala Bias has time to raise to raise the money. So during that time, if he says that he hasn't collected his pay yet, Hareza Nishba Venoito, that he swears and collects, Vimlav, but if that time already passed, in Nishba Venoito, then he doesn't swear and collect, because, like we learned yesterday, at that point, the Bala Bias, if he hadn't paid yet, would be over on Bala told him, and we don't assume, we have a chazaka that the Bala Bias wouldn't have wanted to do that. But the Braisa continues, V'omer Rabbi Yehuda, Emasai, but Rabbi Yehuda says, when would that apply, that there's a shvur, Bizman sh'omalei, ten li schori, chamishim dinner, when, for example, the socher says, pay me the 50 dinner that you were, sh'yesh li b'yadcha, that you owe me, v'hu omeris kabalt mehen dinner zahav, and the Bala Bias says, I already paid you one gold dinner, which is 25 silver dinner, and therefore, so in other words, I already paid you half of what I owe you. Or where there's an argument about the amount of the pay, where the one says you were supposed to pay me two zuz, and the other says I arranged only one. So in those cases, Rabbi Yehuda says there's a motive mitzvah, and therefore the Bala Bias, and therefore instead, what we're going to say is we're going to take that shvur that would have been on the Bala Bias for motive mitzvah, and instead we're going to place it on the socher as this will be one of those shavuos d'rabbanan that we learned about in our Mishnah. But if the Bala Bias says I never hired you, which as we learned yesterday, so he need to have the socher would need to have proof that he was hired. Or he says yes, I did hire you, but I already paid you. Then I'm motzi mechaver l'avaraya. Then This Braisa is saying, then the socher needs to bring the raya, and if not, then he loses out. So now there's no shvua, because Midar Raisa, Rabbi Yehuda says, there's no shvua on the Balabayas. So in other words, it is similar to Rabbi Yehuda's opinion in the Mishnah, but not identical, because here in this Braisa, we're clarifying that this would apply whether he's saying that I wasn't paid, or whether there's an argument over the amount of the pay. Where in the Mishnah, we only had mention of the, we only had mention where he said I wasn't paid. So the earlier Braisa that we brought to question Shmuel, where we said that when that Socher Nishpa Venoito, so fine, then Shmuel is saying that, so Rabbi Yehuda would say then that in this case also the socher can swear and collect, whereas Shmuel would disagree. Shmuel would hold like the Chachamim who say that there's no shavua for the socher in this case, and therefore just that the Baal Bayis swears and is potter. So that earlier Braisa doesn't contradict Rabbi Yehuda, but now we understand that earlier Braisa can be made to fit with the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda in another Braisa, and in turn then we can on Mishnah hadn't addressed that case, but that's how it is. However, Maskeflot of Shisha Berger of Idi, but if Shisha Berger of Idi says, fine, but what are you saying? Ela Klotzatz Rabbi Yehuda he v'loy Rabbanon. So you're telling me that the part of the Braisa about where they're arguing what the amount of the pay was, you're telling me that, and was saying that then the socher swears and collects, Rabbi Yehuda he v'loy Rabbanon, you're telling me that part would be only according to Rabbi Yehuda and not according to the Chachamim. But wait a minute, hashta heifid machmir Rabbi Yehuda makili Rabbanon. Consider it, even in the case of on Mishnah, where the argument is about whether he was paid at all, and Rabbi Yehuda is machmir and says the socher can swear only if there was motive mixus from the Balabayas, and then Rabbanon are makel and saying that even in that case the socher can swear, heicha de makel Rabbi Yehuda machmir Rabbanon. So heicha the maker of Yehuda machmir Rabbanon. You're going to tell me that where Rabbi Yehuda is mako, then the Chachamim are going to be machmir. Where Rabbi Yehuda is saying in this braisa that where they're arguing about the amount and the balabais is motive mitzvahs, Rabbi Yehuda would say that the socher can swear, and you're going to tell me the Chachamim are going to be machmir against that and saying the socher can't swear at all in that case, and instead I'm motzi machaber levaraya. No, apparently that statement of Rabbi Yehuda about that part, about whether he, about whether, when the argument is about the amount of the pay, it sounds like that part, Rabbi Yehuda is stating it, but he's not arguing with the Chachamim on that. In fact, he's saying in the Braisa, he's saying, Amosai, when is that? And the Gemara explains in some other places that Amosai is not necessarily saying that he's arguing, he's clarifying something. So it comes out then that the Chachamim would also agree that in that case then he's able to swear and collect. So how can Shmuel be saying then? So whose opinion would Shmuel be following to say that instead the Balabayas can that instead Hamotzi Mechaver Levaraya, meaning that the Balabayas will swear and be potter? So the Gemara says, fine, the Elamai Rabbanon. So what are you going to tell me then? Fine, you're going to say that Braisa is saying that when they're arguing about the amount, then we're saying like the Rabbanon. And you're going to say that, fine, both Rabbi Yehuda, and you're going to tell me that both Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim agree with that point. Well then, in that case, the Elohad, the Tony Rav Rashmul, Kotsa Tamotz Mechavel of Araya. What about then? The fact is, we do have an earlier Braisa that we said that Rav Rashmul said, if the argument is about the amount of pay, then he said, Amotz Mechavel of Araya. Meaning, and on the face of it, Amotz Mechavel of Araya means he has to actually bring a Raya. There's no Shrua over here. Well then, Mani, who would it be like? Like, Lord of Yehuda, Lord of Bonon. Then it comes out, according to what you're saying, it wouldn't work like Rav Yehuda, it wouldn't work like the Chachamim either. So no, we do, after all, have to say, given that point, we are going to have to say that the Braisa about where they're arguing about the amount of pay is going to be only according to Rabbi Yehuda and not the Rabbanon. Meaning, in other words, we're going to say that Rabbi Yehuda's Amosai is not clarifying, he's actually giving a different opinion. I think actually, now that I think of it, the Gemara does actually say that there's a difference between Rabbi Yehuda, when Rabbi Yehuda says Amosai versus when he says Bamed Varam Amurim, that Amosai means that he's arguing, and Bamed Varam Amurim means he's clarifying. So here in the Braisa, he uses the wording Amosai, implying that he's arguing. So we're going to have to say, after all, that yes, he is in fact arguing. and therefore that's therefore part of the Braisa would indeed be only according to Rabbi Yehuda and not according to the Chachamim. Because like we said, the Chachamim are not going to be with the Chachamim are Mekel compared to him. The Gemara does mention in other places that it might be the other way around. Amasai, the Gemara brings different opinions in a couple of places in Shas when he says Amasai Orba Medvarim Amurim is to explain. Rabbi Yochanan in a different Gemara says that Amasai means he's coming to explain, and Medvarim Amurim means he's coming to argue. In any case, here we're saying that when he says Amasai, though, we're going to say that he's coming to argue after all, and the Chachamim would say that, only Rabbi Yehuda would be saying that Hamotzi Mechavel Avaraya, and the Chachamim would say that there was going to be a Shmuel over here. So that would fit with Shmuel, but the question is, why are the Chachamim Machmer against Rabbi Yehuda? So Alama Rabbah Bahok Mifri, the argument, the underlying argument, and the Chachamim is as follows. Rabbi Yehuda Sovar, but the Daraisa of the Takanta Vasachar. Rabbi Yehuda holds only when there's a Shvur Daraisa on the Balabais, and then in other words, his Moed of Mitzvahs, and then instead, because again, the Balabais is busy with his workers and may not realize, then therefore, Ovdelei Chachamim, Ovdelei Takanta Vasachar, then the Chachamim make a Takana for the Sachar, and instead allow him to swear and collect. But where there's no Shvur in the first place, namely by Kofar Hakel, then Rabbi Yehuda is saying that, so Rabbi Yehuda would say, but if it's only a Shvur Drabbanan, namely Kofar Hakel, so whether we understand, we're not talking about again, in Rabbi Yehuda's times, they didn't have a Shvur for Kofar Hakel, but if, like Tosfos says, if there was a logic to make a Shvur, we would have put it on the Balabais at that point, and therefore, so we're talking about most, there would have been a Shvur Drabbanan, Havoy Takanta, then we only have it's a takana to be mechay of that to then go and make the shvur on the other side or the takanta layavdinan. We don't make a takana on top of another takana. So in other words, therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is saying, given that to begin with, we would have only had a Shvur Derabanan over here, we're not going to then go and say that Shvur Derabanan, we're going to make a further Takana on top of it to flip it to the other one. We're not going to do that, and therefore the result is there can't be a Shvur over here, and therefore just Hamotzi Mechavel Avaraya.
What is exactly Machlokes? What's the Machlokes? Are we arguing about the Shvur Derabanan versus Doraisa, or
so now,
something
so
else?
So far what we're saying is as follows. When the argument, there's two possible arguments that we can have so far between the worker and the employer. You can have an argument whether he was paid at all. And in that case, the Mishnah had said that would be one of the cases where the Chachamim said that the Socher can swear and collect, at least Tosmanoi, during that time before the deadline. And then Rabbi Yehuda had said only when the Balabais is Moedim Mitzvahs. Now we have the case where they're arguing where they're arguing how much he was supposed to be paid. So Shmuel had said that in that case the Balabais swears and his potter. So now after we went through this whole discussion, we're establishing that even though there was a Braisa that said the contrary, that Braisa is only appointed of Yehuda. The Chachamim would hold exactly what Shmuel says, that in that case the Balabais swears and his potter. So now we're explaining why would Rabbi Yehuda disagree, because Rabbi Yehuda would say where the key thing Rabbi Yehuda would say is it depends. Is the Balabais chayav shvur daraisa? Here he's saying I already partially paid you, then he would be chayav shvur daraisa. Then in that case, then instead the chum will say let the socher swear instead. But if there's no shvur daraisa on the Balabais in the first place, then Rabbi Yehuda says we're not going to make a takana, because that would be a takana on top of a takana, that first of all that there should be a shvur in this case, and second of all that we should have the socher swear it, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda is going to say that no, in that case there's no shvur, and just hamotzi mechavel avaraya. So that's according to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbanan Savri, but the Rabbanan Nami Avdin Takanta Vasakhir. The Chacham hold, even when the Shavua is only the Rabbanan, then we're still going to do something on behalf of the Chacham, are still going to make a Takana on behalf of the Sakhir and allow him to swear. On the other hand, they say uktsitza midchadochir. On the other hand, as we said before, that they take the view that when there's an argument about how much he was supposed to be paid, that we expect that the balabais remembers it. In other words, again, we said it's one thing whether he paid or not; he may have forgotten, but because he has other workers, but to remember how much he agreed to pay him, that we can assume he's going to remember, and therefore. So now the balabais would have to swear, and we're going to leave it on him rather than putting it on the sakhir.
Clearly the chachamim cannot go against the takana of the daraisa.
Midaraisa in these cases, the only case of Shavua would be Modim Miktas. There's no Shavua for a Kofa Hakol Daraisa. So now the question basically is, given that there needs to be a Shavua, given that in some cases there needs to be a Shavua Drabanan, in the case of Kofa Hakol, are we going to say now that now the Chacham are furthermore going to take that, or that now we're furthermore going to take that and flip it around and put it on the Sakhir, or are we going to say, no, we don't do that? That's basically the Machlokas, Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. So the Chachamim are going to say, we have no problem with allowing the Sakhir to swear and be able to collect whether the Balabais was Kofar Hakol or whether he was Modi of Miktas. Fine. One, either way, we can flip that Shavua. However, if the argument is over the amount of the pay, then we're going to say, unlike in the case where the Sakhir is claiming he wasn't paid at all, we said, really, the balabais should have to swear in that case. But we're going to say he's not going to swear because he may not know for sure, because he may have mixed him up, considering he's got other workers. But when it comes, and therefore we can say that, as we learned yesterday, that we have that point, as well as we have a chazaka that the balabais is not going to be over on Baltola, and therefore we'll allow the sakhir to swear and to be able to collect. But here, where the argument is over the amount, then the chachamim are going to say, as we've been saying off and on throughout the sugya, that kind of thing, a person will remember. And therefore, we have no reason to say that when the balabais is saying, "I paid you, we agreed that I'm going to pay you only one zuz rather than two," we have no reason to say that he's forgetful about that. Therefore, the chachamim against Rabbi Yehuda are going to say, "We're going to do the usual rule over here, where the balabais is going to swear, and then he's going to be potter and from paying any more than the one." So now, when Shmuel says, at the top of the Amud, when the Chachamim of Rav's Yeshiva sent this question to Shmuel, in this case, Mi Nishba, who swears? And he answers, the Baal Bayis will swear. That follows, now that we went through this whole discussion, then that's the Maskana, that's how the Chachamim hold, and that's what we're going to do.
In the case of payment.
In the case where the argument is how much he's supposed to be paid, how much they agreed to in the first place, rather than the argument how much he paid him so far. Right. So when it's an argument how much he paid him so far, the Chacham is saying it doesn't matter whether the Sakhir says I didn't get paid at all, or whether the balabais counterclaims and says I paid you half of what I owe you already. Either way, the Chacham are saying that the sakhir could swear against Rabbi Yehuda, but on the other hand, when it's an argument over the amount, how much he's supposed to be paid, then we have Rabbi Yehuda is going to be saying there's no shavua there at all, and the Chacham are going to say there's going to be a shavua, but that shavua is going to be on the balabais. Let's go on. The Mishnah says, so that was the case of the Sakhir. So those are the cases where the Sakhir swears and collects. So in a nutshell, we're talking about that the Sakhir is saying I wasn't paid. According to Rabbi Yehuda, only if the Balabais counterclaims and says that I paid you half, where there already exists a shavua, and then we just flip it and say that the sakhir swears. According to the Chacham, there's no difference. Then we have And then we have the detail where there's an argument between them how much the pay was supposed to be. So then we're going to say that the shavua in the end is on the balabais. And he's going to have to, and he's going to have to swear. So the Rambam summarizes the relevant halachas as follows. So again, all of this is only if he hired him with agents. Here, the Rambam summarizes the halachas as follows. If he demands his pay bismano during that deadline that we said, the 12 hours, and the balabai says, I paid you, and the socher says, I didn't receive it yet. So then the chum said that the socher should swear with the kittas chayfets and then collect, because the balabai is busy with his workers, and meanwhile the socher has really been looking forward to this pay. On the other hand, if he hired him without Adim, then like we learned yesterday, he has a nigger because he could say, I never hired you in the first place, and then the balabais would swear Shavuos Hefes or Moedim Mitzvos, as the case may be. Then he goes on to bring relevant dinim about the amount of time during which he has to claim from him. Knows that's the Gemara and Bav Metzia, so it's not relevant to us over here right now. Then you have in the next halacha, the Rambam goes on to say, if there's an argument between them about the amount, one versus two, two versus three, or whatever, then I'm Motzi Mechavel Araya, and then even if the balabais already, if the socher can't bring a raya, even though he already paid him the lesser amount, or he says to him, here, I'll give you your pay right now, then the balabais is nishba benekidus chayfetz. And then Rambam describes, we do want shaloyelach ha-socher v'pachay nefesh, we don't want the socher to leave disappointed, saying, I couldn't bring a raya, and therefore that's it, I have nothing at all, so at least we're going to require that balabais to swear, again, provided that he was hired with aiding, because otherwise the balabais has a nigri. So now, next, the Mishnah had talked about, the next case is Nigzal Ketzer. We said another case of Nishva V'Noitel is where a person says that he was robbed. So Kate said, what does that mean? They see that a person went into his house to take a mashkin from him without permission, whereas we talked about yesterday, the Torah says that you're not allowed to go in and take a mashkin. You have to wait for the guy to bring one out to you. So now, later on, the balabai says you took something illegally, and the other one says I didn't. So the Gemara says, what do you mean when he's good, just because Adam went in, saw him going in, doesn't mean that he actually took anything. The Duma Loy Mishkanoi, after all, maybe he didn't actually take anything from him. He went in there thinking to take something, and then once he was inside, he realized, the Torah says, I'm not allowed to, so I didn't. After all, we have a similar case. Miloy Omer Rav Nachman. Didn't Rav Nachman say, Hayman de Noket Narga Biyodeh? If a person is holding an axe, the Omer, and he says, Ezo Ve'ekter Le'Ledikla De Planya, I'm going to go chop down Pliny's palm tree. But we don't actually see him do it. V'ishtakach de Kotor V'shodi. Later on, we find that the tree, in fact, chopped down. Doesn't mean loyam yunin duhu kafle. We don't necessarily say that he's the one who chopped it down. Alma ovidinish to gozin v'lo yobin. So a person might well make an empty threat and then not carry it out. So here also, he may be making an empty threat, basically. He may be saying, I'm going to go in, this guy owes me money, I'm going to go in and take something from him, but he didn't actually end up taking anything. So how can we say that the other guy should swear and collect whatever he's claiming? Tosfos brings from the Rekeach, this is Davka, stam a person, we would say, for example, in this case of the tree, we wouldn't assume that he chopped it down. But Tosfos points out, muchsak l'kach loy, not if he already has a chazakah of doing such things, of going and damaging people's property based on saying that I'm going to do that. So then Tosfos says, v'chein nira, and so it seems, and that taka brought l'halacha, and then later sifra halacha, that if a person already has a pervasive habit of doing that kind of thing, of threatening to do something and then actually following through with it, then now in the future, the next time he threatens, then we have good reason to say that in fact he did do it, and therefore that we're going to be machai of him, even though we didn't actually see him do it. The Chofetz Chaim also brings it in connection with Hilchos Lashon Hara, a case where a person threatens to do something and we have good reason to think that he actually did it because he's done such things before. So, yeah. Okay. So the question is, though, in this case, we're not talking about that this guy has a habit of doing this kind of thing. So how can we say, just because he saw him go into the other guy's house, that automatically we can assume he took something, and therefore that the other guy can swear how much it was and collect on that basis? How can we do that? So the answer is Ema Umishkinoi. So you're right. When the Mishnah had said he went into his house to take a mashkin, we don't mean that he just said, I'm going in to do that. We actually see that he took something. Well, then what's the problem? Velechsei my Mishkinoi. Well, then see what he took, and that would be, and that would be what he has to pay. Where's the Rishavua? The answer is Omer Rabba Babachona, Omer Rabbi Yechanan, Betoyne Kalem and Itolim Tachas Knofab. We're talking about that the Baal HaBayis is claiming that he took kalim, small kalim that a person could hide under his clothing, and therefore the edim don't know what he took. So the edim know that he took something. So here Tosfos discusses actually that it can mean that the edim saw some of the kalim, but now the Baal HaBayis is saying there was more than what you saw. Or there can be actually that the Edom saw that he took something, but it's all hidden under his clothing, and they don't know what exactly. Tosfos discusses those kinds of things in some detail. But that's what we're talking about over here. In other words, that we know he took, we just don't know how much. So now, this is the case with the Chachamim made a takana that the Nigzo can swear and collect. So now we do have to consider this, though. We have to consider that in general, we have a Chazaka. When it comes to metalplin, we have a chazaka called chazaka shekol mash shetachas yodah shel adam shaloi. We have a chazaka, whatever metalplin a person is in possession of is in possession of, we're generally going to assume belong to him. So now let's see how that fits, how exactly we relate that to this din that we just said over here. So Omer Rav Yehuda, Ra'uhu Shehitmin Kalim Tachas Knof of a Yotza. If Edim see that he hid something under his clothing and went out and they don't know what it is, the Omer Lekuchenhem B'Yodi, and he says, I actually bought them, and the Baal HaBayis is saying, Now, so far, we don't know what the Baal HaBayis is saying. Rashi explains, based on the continuation of the Gemara, that it's not the Baal HaBayis is saying you stole them, but he's saying I lent them to you. So now in that case, Ein Neman. So now this person holding the things is not believed that he bought them. Even if he were to swear to that, so he would have to return them. But first of all, we're talking about only when this Baal HaBayis does not regularly sell his kalim. Abba Baal HaBayis also limker as Caleb, but if it's a Baal HaBayis who often sells his kalim, so we're not talking about like he has a business doing it, but in other words, sometimes you have a person where, you know, every so often they'll have a garage sale or something. Every so often they decide, I have too much stuff and I need to sell it. So where you have this Baal HaBayis regularly sells such things, Neman, then the person who claims that he bought it will be believed. I'll have to swear Shavuos has this, but once he does that, he will be believed to say that they're his, even though he was hiding them under his clothing. But the Gemara continues, v'she'ein also limkeres Caleb. Now, when we're saying that we're saying, on the other hand, that we wouldn't believe him when a Baal HaBayis does not usually sell his kalim, nami le'amoran, but also when would we say that we wouldn't believe him, ela dvarim shein davkin lahatmin, only things that people don't usually hide. Because, in other words, he might be embarrassed that people should know that he has to borrow such kalim from somebody else, so therefore he might hide them. Avol dvarim shedarkan lahatmin, but where there are things that are normally hidden, neman, then we would believe him, because then the fact that he's hiding them doesn't show that he's hiding them because he borrowed them. He's hiding them because these are things that are usually hidden. Now, the fact is, in other words, Rashi says, in that case, even though this Baal HaBayis is not also limkeres Caleb, but still, the fact that it's true, this Baal HaBayis doesn't usually sell things, he doesn't usually have garage sales like that, but sometimes he may be short of money and sell something, so therefore we can't just believe his claim that he didn't sell these things at all and only lent them if these are things that are normally hidden. So then in that case, again, then the person who says that he borrowed them, the person who says that he bought them would swear Shavuos Heses that it's so, and then he would be able to keep them. The She'en Dakan Lahakman Nami Layamaran, even when these are things that are not normally hidden, there's another factor involved over here as well. Also, Ella Inishtloit Sniya, only a person who is not naturally Tsniastik. So he doesn't usually hide his things. Avol inishtitznia, but if it's a person who regularly hides his things, he doesn't usually carry around open kalim in the marketplace, hainu urche, then we would say it's normal for him to hide these things, and therefore we have good reason to believe him to say that he bought them. And v'loya moran, ella, ze'o mishra'ulin, v'ze'o melekuchin. Furthermore, this whole discussion so far was only where the Baal HaBayis says that I lent them to him, or rented, or what have you, and the other one is saying that I bought them. Avol gnuvin, but if the Baal HaBayis is claiming that you stole them, lav kol kamine, then he doesn't have the ability to make such a claim. Lach zuki inish beganvi loy machzakinen. We do not say that a person has a. We would not say that a person has a chazaka of being a thief. So therefore, we don't have a reason to accept the Baal HaBayis' claim. If we know that he's done this kind of thing before, then that's different. So far, in other words, we're saying that the Baal HaBayis would be able to. So first of all, the case of our Mishnah where he's saying that he was robbed, that the guy came into his property and took something that he wasn't supposed to. Then we said if it's hidden under his clothing and if the Edom saw him go in and come out with something hidden under his clothing, then we do have that would be the case where the Baal HaBayis is swearing. But we're saying over here that if the guy walks out with Caleb under his clothing, and we don't know that he was a ganav, and the only argument is, do they actually belong to him, or did he borrow them? Then we have these various factors that we said, whether this Baal HaBayis normally sells things or not, whether these are things that are normally hidden or not, whether this person regularly hides his things as well. And on top of that, the Gemara says there's another factor as well. V'loyamoran ela b'dvorim hasuin l'hashul l'haskir. This would all apply, what exactly applies, we'll talk about it in a minute, only with things hasuin l'hashul l'haskir that are made to be rented, to be lent out, or to be rented out. So now, therefore, the Baal HaBayis says that I lent them to him, then we have good reason to say, so Rashi learns that we're saying that in that case, then we would have more reason to believe the Baal HaBayis that he actually lent them or rented them out, because these are things that are regularly lahashul lahaskir. But things that are not meant to be lent and rented out, nemon, then the other person would have good reason to believe the other person to say that he bought them, because these are things that are not normally rented out. Now, first of all, you have a discussion in Rishonim, you have the Rambam versus pretty much everybody else. What is the definition of Dvorim Hasurim Lahashul Lahaskir? The Rambam explains, and he says many Rishonim before him explain that anything could be rented or lent out, and therefore most things would be considered Dvorim Hasurim Lahashul Lahaskir. The Rambam explains very forcefully and says, not so, Dvorim Hasurim Lahashul Lahaskir. The Rambam explains means things that to begin with are made to be rented or lent out. So the Rambam gives some examples of that to give modern day equivalents. Let's say, for example, centerpieces for weddings. Nobody buys those just to use them on their own table. People buy them in order to rent them out or lend them out for weddings and other similar things like that. So the Rambam says, if you have something like that to begin with is made for that purpose, or you have something that we know a person bought for that purpose, say for example a person bought a car and he's regularly using it to rent out to people, then that would also be considered Dvorim Asurim Lahashul Lahaskir. But the Rambam explains, in other words, as far as other household goods, yes, a person could lend out pretty much anything, but those aren't considered Dvorim Asurim Lahashul Lahaskir unless they're made in the first place to be lent or rent, or to be lent out or rented, or unless we know that this person regularly does that with this. Pretty much all the other Rishonim disagree with the Rambam on that and say no, Dvorim Asurim Lahashul Lahaskir means we just look at what does this person do? Does he regularly lend out, or do people often lend out or rent out these kinds of things? Then it would be considered Dvorim Asurim Lahashul Lahaskir, and if not, then not. So that's first of all. Second of all, then you also have when the Gemara is saying over here that this that we said, if it's Dvorim Asurim Lahashul Lahaskir, but if not, then not. So now Rashi explains, in other words, the point is this that we're saying, that when this person walks out of the house with something concealed under his garments, and we're saying that he says that I bought them, and we said when we have certain factors, like we said before, we wouldn't believe him. Rashi says that would be only dvarim asurim lahashir lahaskir, only things that are regularly lent or rented out, because then we would have strong reason to say, given that this thing is regularly lent out, then it's very likely the Baal HaBayis is correct that he lent them out rather than selling them to him. But now you have a number of Rishonim that have the Girsa the other way around. And say that Rabbi Hanano brings it over here, the Rishonim bring from Rabbi Hai Goin, that's the other way around, that all of this only applies to Rishonim LaHashal LaHaskir. Meaning, in other words, that when do we say that the one who took it is believed to say that I bought it under the circumstances that we said before? We were talking about somebody who regularly sells his kalim, and these things are regularly hidden, etc., but only if he took things that ain't asurin lahashal lahaskir. But if he took kalim that are meant to draw him asurin lahashal lahaskir, so even though the fact is we don't have that chazaka that kol mashatachas yadar shal adam hu shaloi, because these things are so regularly lent and rented out, that we have very strong reason to say that in fact that in this case he borrowed them rather than buying them. So he's going out over there with things hidden under his clothing, which seems to be, now why if he bought it, why would he be hiding it? According to Rashi, only when it's Dvorim Asurim Lahashal Lahaskir would we say that not. We can say that generally he would have that Chazaka, that it's his, provided that we have the other factors that we said before. This is a Baal HaBayis who regularly sells his kalim, and this person regularly hides them, etc. And then also, where it's Dvarim Asurim Lahashal Lahaskir. So Rashi says that we're always going to assume that the one who has the chazaka on them, that they remain his, according to the other Rishonim, we would say it remains in the chazaka of the original ones. So what do we mean by, so where do we see this distinction of Dvarim Asurim Lahashal Lahaskir? So the Gemara says, Deshalach Rav Huna Ba'Ovin, Rav Huna Ba'Ovin sent the following message. Dvarim Asurim Lahashal Lahaskir, when you have something which is regularly lent out or rented out, but Omer Lekuch and Hen B'Yadi, and now a person who's holding on to it says that I bought them, Einu Neman, we wouldn't believe him, because there's much more of a likelihood that in fact he just borrowed them or rented them, as things are usually done. So then he would have to bring actual proof that he bought them. Kiha, as we have the example, the Rava Apik Zuga de Sarvala, the Sifra de Aganta, Rava Miyasmi, Rava took away one time from Yisomim, where Yisomim were in possession of these things, and normally we don't take something away from Yisomim without a very strong proof, but he took these things away to return them to somebody who said that they were his. Zuga de Savala, a pair of scissors that are used by people who comb out and smooth out clothing. The Sifra de Agadda, and a Sefer of Agadda. So Yisraelim had Yarshan these things from their father, but meanwhile another person brought proof that they used to be his, that they were his at one time, and says that I had lent them to him, and then he died before having a chance to return them, and Rava gives them, and Rava says, in fact, he gets them back, Bidvarim Asurim Lahashal Lahaskir, these were things that are regularly lent out or rented out. So therefore, so we wouldn't have believed the father to say that he bought them. If we would have believed him, then we would have to advance that argument on behalf of the Yisomim, because we always advance, based and is always responsible to advance any argument on behalf of the Yisomim that we can. So, therefore, in this case, because of the Dvarim Asurim Lahashal Lahaskir, then we don't say that, and therefore Robert took it from the Yisomim and gave it to the other guy. So we see, in other words, that there is this difference between Dvarim Asurim Lahashal Lahaskir, again, according to the Rambam, specifically things that are meant to be lent out in the first place, things that to begin with are made in order to be lent out, and according to everybody else, things that regularly are lent or rented out, even if they're not made for that purpose. Rashi draws a distinction over here between Sfarim of Agadda and other kinds of Sfarim. Rashi points out, people don't regularly learn books of Agadda. Other kinds of Sfarim are not Asurim Lahashal Lahaskir because they would get easily ruined. So people wouldn't regularly lend them out, and therefore if he says that I bought them, then we would believe him. And Rashi brings us from his Rebbe, Rabbi Yitzchok HaLevi, to make that distinction. Tosfos, on the other hand, says, no, on the contrary, other Sfarim are definitely lent out more, because Tosif Sfarim, Mashil Lachedim, the Gemara says elsewhere, a person writes Sfarim and lends them to others, it's a very great Schus, so therefore, so ad Adram, but then other Sfarim, all the more so, then we would say that the same rule would apply, we would call them Dvarim Asurim Lahashal Lasker. Tosfos also points out that another point is as well that we're talking about over here the person who claims that he owns the sefer regularly lent out his sfarim, and we know he regularly, among others, lent sfarim to these Yisraelim's father, and therefore we have good reason to argue over here that he did lend it. So we have all of these. So again, the Mishnah had talked about a case where the person went in to take a mashkin illegally and comes out with something under his skirts of his clothing, and then we said that the balabais nishba v'noito, because the other person definitely did, and then we have good reason to say the other person did something illegal, taking something that he shouldn't have, and then again, Rabbi Yehuda had said only if there's moedim mitzvahs, and the Chum say doesn't matter as long as the Edom can see that he's taking something. But now, this part that we were talking about on this Omud over here so far is where it's not that he took something illegally. The question is just he took something, and the question is whether he borrowed it or whether he bought it. So then you're going to have these various factors over here. Does this Balabais regularly sell things or not? Are we talking about things that regularly are hidden, or that this person personally regularly hides his things? And whether it's Dvorim Asurim Lahashal or Haskir, that last one subject to that Machlokas we've shown him about what exactly is the case where we would believe him that he bought it, versus in what cases would we say that we have to assume that he borrowed it. All right, the Gemara continues. Omar Rava, so Rava says more generally about this halacha that we said that where there's reason to be concerned that it was actually stolen, that the person took the mashkin illegally. So we said that Balabais swears how much what was taken and collects on that basis. So Rava points out, after the Shomer Nishba, it doesn't have to be the Balabais himself swears in that case. Even a Shomer, somebody who's watching the house, can also swear what was taken. So the Balabais can collect on that basis. Even the Shomer's wife could swear instead of Balabais. Let's say the Shomer himself wasn't home and his wife was home. And the Rashba points out, the Gemara tells us in Bav Metzia, Kol HaMafkid Adas Ishtei Bnei Bonav Bnei Beisei HuMafkid, when a person gives something as a Pekodin to somebody else to watch, we assume that sometimes he's going to have his wife or his children watch it instead of him. So the same thing over here, when Reuven, who owned the house, appointed Shimon to watch his house while he's away, and Shimon in turn asks his wife to do that when Shimon is not available, then that's fine. We can't say that Shimon was being careless by giving it to somebody else, because Reuven should have realized that Shimon is going to do that in the first place. So again, now if Levi comes in and takes something and the Edom see that he's carrying out something, then now we're saying that Shimon or Shimon's wife can swear what was taken and collect on that basis. So the Gemara says, Boyer Papa, so the Papa asks the question, Schirer l'kitei mai? What about if it's not a Shomer? What if it's about a worker who boards in the Balabais' house? A socher would be somebody who's hired for a period of time, and lekitoy would be where he's hired to collect his grain, like a seasonal worker or something. So would we say the same thing? Mai, can they also swear? And the Gemara says, on the one hand, they board in the house. On the other hand, the fact is that they're not in charge of the house, so maybe they don't have that emunus. So the Gemara says, teiku, so we have to leave that unanswered. So therefore, if the Schirer Lekite make that claim, we can't necessarily be able to collect on that basis. Okay. The Gemara continues, Omelet of Yemelet of Ashi, Tarni the Kosa de Kaspamai. What about now? So here we're saying that the Balabais is believed to swear and to collect. What about if he's claiming that it was a huge thing that was taken? What if he claimed that it was a silver cup? Would we believe him on a say-so and say that he had a silver cup and make this person who came in have to pay for that? So Ravashi answers Chazina. Well, we have to see the situation. E inish de omid hu. If in fact this person is rich, omid literally means estimable. So in other words, we can estimate that he is the kind of person who would have a silver cup. well then, oi inishta mehemanu, or if we know that he's a trustworthy person to mafka di inshigambe, where people sometimes deposit things with him for safekeeping, so therefore he may well have had a silver cup in his house, not his own, but rather somebody else's, well then, mishtaba b'shokel, then we will be able to, he'll be able to swear and collect even something expensive like that. V'im loy loy, and if not, then not, then we wouldn't believe him. So in other words, in short, we're going to have to evaluate how realistic is his claim that such and such was taken from him. Is it realistic that in fact he had such a thing in his house? Okay. The Mishnah had said the next case of Nishba ben Noisel is Nechbal Ketzad. We said the case of a person who was injured. So we said that you have Edim that he went into a place uninjured and came out injured, and he's making a claim that you who in that house injured me, and the other one says that not. So this is another example of Nishba ben Noisel. So, now we have to consider, he might have done it to himself. So, Omer of Yehudu Amar Shmuel, Leishonu, Ela B'mokom Sheyachol L'chabal Ba'atzmai. This would only apply, and he has to swear, where it's something where he could have injured himself. So then, fine, it's not usual for a person to injure himself, so therefore we'll accept the shvur from him that this other guy did it. Aval Mokum Shane Yochal Chabal Ba'atzmo, which is the part of his body where it's impossible for him to have injured himself, then he can collect even without a shvur, because who else would have done it? So even though there's no Edim, nevertheless, it seems obvious that this guy did it to him. So the question is why? Why? After all, he might have banged himself or rubbed himself against the wall and gotten injured that way. So how can we say that we should collect and you should collect like that? The answer is Tony Rabchia. Rabchia Torn and a Braisa. Suppose, for example, we see a bite mark on him on his back or on his elbows. So then that would be the case. Obviously, he couldn't have done it to himself, and you can't do that. And you can't do that by rubbing against the wall or whatever. So therefore, obviously, it must be that the other guy bit him over there. So therefore, he could collect even without a shvur. Still, the Gemara says the Duma Acha Ovid Lay. Okay, but maybe somebody else did it. And the answer is the Laka Acha we're talking about, where there's no one else in that house, in that room, and therefore it's obvious that this guy must have done it to him. So here, where it's impossible for him to have done it himself, then he would be able to collect without a shvur. The Rambam, in fact, learns differently. The Rambam learns all Gemara differently. That these are the cases where he would have to swear. So the Rambam phrases it as follows. Two Edim say that he went in to the house uninjured and came out injured, but they didn't see the actual injury. So now the other guy says, I didn't injure. The one says, you did have a nishva v'noitel, but only if it's a place where he, only if, when does he swear? Only if it's some place where he could have hit himself or where there's, it's possible that somebody else might have done it. But if there's nobody else and he couldn't have done it to himself, how does he know to below shvur and then he collects? And he collects without a shvur. So, the Rambam is restating, of course, exactly what it says in Or Gemara, but he is making the point that if there was somebody else over there, then we would actually still believe him to say that it was this one who injured him rather than the other one. So the Nesa Kalim and the Rambam discuss why would we say that? Why would we believe him with a shvur in that case? One point is, in other words, that's usually not going to suspect that because it's not normal that the other guy would hit him and then the Balabais wasn't even there and he might be blamed unjustly. So therefore that's why the Rambam says that if there were three people over there, then we still would require him to take a shvur only if, in the cases like Or Gemara is saying, it's impossible, he did it to himself, and there's nobody else around, then therefore we would say that we don't even need a shvur, then he can collect without a shvur, because obviously who else could have done it? And then the Mishnah had said another case where a person, another case where the Chachamim make that the one who's going to collect is the one who takes the Shvuah. So the Mishnah had said, v'shekenegdei choshur v'chola, we said if the opposite party is somebody who's suspect on a Shvuah, v'afil a Shvuah Shav, even if he's suspect only on a Shvuah Shav. So in other words, we said, so let's say it's a regular case of modim miktas, where a person would have to swear, daranaisa, but now if that person who's modim miktas is choshur al Shvuah, then instead of having him swear, instead we're going to make the other claimant swear and collect the whole thing. So the Gemara says, "My afilu shvuas shav." What does the Gemara mean? What does the Mishnah mean by that phrase, "afilu shvuas shav"? In other words, why is shvuas shav? Why is it more of a chiddush than the other kinds of shvuas, shvuas ha'edus and shvuas ha'pikadon? So the answer is loy mebaya karma. That's exactly it. The Braisa, the Mishnah is saying, needless to say, loy mebaya honoch kanoch the isbu kudas mamon. Needless to say, if previously he had lied about shvuas ha'edus or about shvuas ha'pikadon, where he caused a loss of money, then for sure now we're not going to allow him to take a shvua where we suspect that he might now go and swear falsely again in order to save himself some money. Even if we're talking about just a shvua shav of the kind that we learned earlier in the Masechta, where there's no loss of money in the first place. It's just a verbal denial. Loy Mahaman, nevertheless, the Mishnah is saying that we don't believe him. Tosfos brings in that connection that the the Gemara says, well, then why does the Mishnah mention also in this connection a Shavuos Bitui? Why mention only a Shavuos Shav? And the Shavuos Bitui that we learned about extensively early on the Sechta, where a person swears that he will do something and doesn't do it, or vice versa, or that I did do something and didn't do it, or vice versa. So it sounds like the Mishnah is excluding that and saying in that case, if he's previously been over on a Shavuos Bitui, he would be able to take the Shavuos here in Beis Din. But why is that? So the Gemara says, because Kikotoni Shvur to Kikama Shtaba Bashikra Kamishtaba. Because we're talking about only a kind of Shvur where when he made the Shvur, right away then it was a lie. Aba Shvur's Bitui, but a Shvur's Bitui, La Ba, at least, the kind where he said, I will eat, and he didn't end up eating, or vice versa. The Ikal Memed of Kushta Kamishtaba, maybe he did truly swear truthfully, he did fully intend to not eat. And then afterwards he was over, fine, he had a Yetzer Hara. That doesn't mean necessarily that he's going to deliberately go and lie on a Shvua, in the future. So Tosfos brings in this connection that, let's say a person was over on a Chedem, maybe he shouldn't be possible to Shvua, because when he accepted the Chedem, he swore truthfully. But Tosfos says that not necessarily, because the Chedem would involve things of Dinim Ominous. Anyway, so you could say that there is some loy katoni, so the Mishnah is not necessarily talking like that. Maybe he's not choshud just because he was over on a Shavuot Abba. But the Gemara says, Tenach oichal v'loy oichal. Fine, that would explain. Let's say, for example, if he made a Shavuot that I will eat, and he didn't end up eating, so he meant to do a Shavuot, but he didn't do it, or vice versa. Achalti v'loy achalti ma'iklamemer. But the fact is, Shavuos Bitui, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, also includes the cases where he says, I did eat, and he hadn't eaten, or vice versa. So then his Shavuot to begin with was a false Shavuot. So in that case, then we could say that maybe in this, by the same token over here, he might swear falsely. Why did the Mishnah leave out Shavuos Bitui? So the answer is fine. The Mishnah didn't leave it out. Tana Shavuos Shav, behold the Domi Lei, because the Mishnah mentioned Shavuos Shav, but it means anything else that is similar to that. Any time where he had sworn a Shavuot L'Sha'avar, and then it was false, then from now on we suspect that he's swearing falsely in Beis Din, and therefore we can't allow him to swear, and therefore if there comes up a case in Beis Din where he would have to swear, then instead we're going to flip the Shavuot on the other party and make the other party swear and collect. Because we can't allow this one to swear, because now he's choshud that he might swear falsely as he did before. But if it's a case where he was violated a shvur l'habba, then we wouldn't necessarily say that, because then it just means he fully intended to keep his shvur, and then his yetzer hara got the better of him. So now we wouldn't assume that he's going to go now and actually knowingly swear falsely about something which is false right now. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, and we'll talk more about these dinim of where a person is suspect on a shvur and what we do in such cases.